Notes from the Electronic Cottage. I'm Jim Campbell. These days, it's not uncommon to hear people express frustration with software. Why can't a stupid program just work? Our legislators in Maine have been asking variations on that question as they look, for example, at the Department of Human Services' new computer system, a system that took years to build, couldn't bill or pay health care providers properly, and 63 or so million dollars later, will simply be abandoned. The same thing, more or less, happened on the federal level with the new computer system that the FBI tried to install. Ditto for the IRS. And although we seldom hear about it in public, the same thing happens almost every day in the business world. In fact, depending on what survey you're reading, somewhere between 60 and 80% of software projects fail to be completed on time, with the functionality promised, at anything approximating the original budget. Although we don't have access to the halls of industry, all we need to do to see the truth of this observation is to look at complicated commercial software, such as the Windows operating system. It took years after Windows was first announced for the operating system to actually appear. Even today, it took almost 6 years between the release of Windows XP and Windows Vista. And during those years, in fact, even up until today, there are almost weekly patches of one sort or another to fix something that doesn't work at all or doesn't work the way it should. The question comes up again. Why can't they make software that works? It can't be that hard. Well, it turns out that making software is hard. Very hard, in fact. And it's hard for a complex and not well understood set of reasons. That's the conclusion that Scott Rosenberg came to in his book entitled Dreaming in Code. The subtitle speaks volumes. Quote, 2 dozen programmers, 3 years, 4,732 bugs, and one quest for transcendent software. End quote. And that quest is not over yet. Back in late 2002, Rosenberg decided to follow the development of a new software program called Chandler, named after the famous mystery novelist Raymond Chandler. The program was to be, and still aspires to be, an open-source personal information manager, or PIM, PIM. But unlike any PIM that exists today, Chandler would be incredibly flexible and allow users to manage their personal information, whether phone numbers or appointments or email messages, or all those messy tidbits of information we all have on physical or mental sticky notes, in pretty much any way we pleased. For many reasons, this is a daunting challenge for computers, but the people assembled for the job certainly seemed up to it. Leading the project was Mitch Kapoor. He's the fellow who wrote Lotus 1-2-3 back in the 1980s, the spreadsheet application that was the killer app catalyst for the personal computer revolution. He also wrote a program called Agenda that was such a good information manager that some people still run the DOS operating system just so they can keep using Agenda today. Mitch Kapoor became very rich when he sold Lotus to IBM, and among the things he wanted to do was to create an information manager for the 21st century. He wasn't looking to make money from the project. In fact, he decided to make the project open source and essentially give the software away. He had the money to do things right, and he hired some of the best and brightest software engineers and programmers to make the project go, including the legendary Andy Hertzfeld, who pretty much designed and programmed the original Macintosh operating system. Scott Rosenberg, who had co-founded Salon.com on the internet, thought this would be a great opportunity to follow the development of an ambitious and important software project, much as Tracy Kidder had followed the development of a mini-computer hardware product in his famous book, The Soul of a New Machine. Originally, Kapoor expected that it would take about a year to release a 1.0 version of Chandler. Despite all of the experience and resources poured into Chandler, that was a grossly over-optimistic expectation. In fact, 5 years after the Chandler project began, Chandler is only up to release 0.6. You can follow the progress of the project at www.osafoundation.org. So, what happened? Why have so many smart people had such a difficult time trying to put a relatively simple concept into machine executable code? That's the question that Dreaming in Code tries to come to terms with. And watching the process unfold through almost 400 well-written pages is fascinating for us civilians who wouldn't know a piece of computer code from a zip code. Along the way, we learn that 60 years ago, the computer genius Alan Turing, one of history's great codebreakers, came to the conclusion that you could never tell for sure if a program would work or not. We also learn a whole new and very colorful vocabulary of computer terms, most of them having to do with particular computer bugs. Terms such as black holes, turtles, snakes, axe sharpening, and dog fooding. And we learn in the end, in the words of another great programmer, Donald Knuth, that, quote, software is hard, end quote. For all of us who wonder why the stupid program just doesn't work the way it's supposed to, Dreaming in Code provides some very accessible and even entertaining answers. The Chandler program may yet reach version 1.0, and when it does, it will be a truly innovative tool for us to use to manage the information that piles up on our computers every day. But the price will have been steep, and the likelihood that Chandler, like the many software projects that have preceded it, will show us by its mistakes how to make software better is very small indeed, because while programmers may be able to dream in code, making that code real is still a very elusive undertaking. Happily, keeping up on what's going on in Realms Electronic is not quite that difficult, and we'll keep on doing our best right here on future editions of Notes from the Electronic Cottage.